grantsfdn.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up today, we're going to hear Florida This Week from this past Friday night. It's a public television program that's a discussion about state and local politics. And while this program runs, you can always make a comment about it by emailing us here in the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. We're going to talk about one of the big mysteries in Florida: which counties were hacked by the Russians during the 2016 campaign. That's one of the topics we'll talk about as we listen back to Florida This Week right here on 88.5 FM. Coming up next, it turns out the Russians did hack some Florida elections offices. The governor helps local governments that want to ban plastic straws. Environmentalists call on the governor to veto the toll road expansion bill. And the Seminole tribe stops hundreds of billions of dollars in payments to the state. Political insights next on Florida This Week. Welcome back. This week, our panelists are Caitlin Johnston is a reporter for the Tampa Bay Times. Ron Pierce is the president and CEO of RSA Consulting Group, a lobbyist, a political consultant, and a Republican. Maya Brown is a political strategist and a Democrat. Antar Newsom is an attorney and a professor at St. Petersburg College. Well, it's great to see you guys. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Well, this week, elected officials finally got a briefing on the Russian hacking in Florida during the 2016 election. First, on Tuesday, Governor Ron DeSantis was told by the FBI that Russian hackers did gain access to voter databases in two Florida counties ahead of the 2016 presidential election. Then the governor signed a non-disclosure agreement with the FBI to say no more. Later in the week, a bipartisan group of Florida's congressional delegation was briefed about the hacking. They said it was unacceptable that neither the FBI nor the Department of Homeland Security will allow them to identify the two counties. The Florida lawmakers want the federal agencies to be more transparent. They said the public has the right to know if their data was breached, similar to a credit card company notifying its customers. And the FBI also told lawmakers that there was suspicious activity around other counties, but did not identify those counties by name. The lawmakers said they were told with certainty that final election results were not compromised, but it was less clear whether the Russian hackers were able to use the voter data in any other way. Last year, then-Senator Bill Nelson of Florida said Russians had penetrated the systems of certain Florida counties and had free rein to move about before the 2018 midterm election, but he was widely ridiculed at the time by Republicans. And the Washington Post and Politico are reporting that one of the counties hacked was Washington County in the Florida Panhandle, and that the hackers were able to access Washington County voter information files. So, Maya, let's start with you. First of all, should there be more transparency on the part of those who have been briefed about this?
Absolutely. I completely understand that there should be some discretion, understanding that law enforcement is still going through their investigation. However, not doing anything shouldn't be an option. I think it's important, especially for our political figures, to ensure that our voter information is protected and secured, and that they are actively engaged in ensuring that this doesn't happen again. Their lack of doing anything right now just breeds the distrust that voters have in government and in politics, and directly has an impact on voter turnout or the lack thereof.
Mm-hmm. So, Ron, do you agree? I mean, at least the folks that know the governor and others, the governor did sign the non-disclosure agreement. Word is leaking out from unnamed sources to the Washington Post and Politico that one of the counties was Washington County. But, you know, around the state, everybody's asking their supervisor of elections, were we hacked?
Sure, no, I agree. Look, this is a bipartisan issue at the end of the day. You know, it undermines the integrity of the election system if we can't trust if our information is secure. And again, look, I don't think at the end of the day it probably impacted the outcome of the election, but I think to the point that was raised is, how is that information being used And make sure this is not being lost on any of us. The information that they that was breached probably was information that any of us could access, some type of a public records request. So we could get access to that information, but this is not happening just in Florida. I mean, Arizona, Illinois, two statewide systems have been breached. So from a security standpoint, we need to make sure that our local supervisors and our at the state level, the Division of Elections have the resources they need to make sure that this information is being protected from a security standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Well, Caitlin, surely the Russian hackers know which counties they hacked, so it's no secret to them.
Right. I mean, that's the argument being made, that are the only people left in the dark the counties that are affected. You know, the hackers know who it is. Now we have senior, you know, Florida leaders who know who it is, but the people who were affected and who were violated don't know. Mm-hmm.
So one of the questions, and all the elected officials who were quoted so far on the record are saying that no results were changed, meaning that once you got into the voting booth, either in the primary or the general, those results weren't changed. But there is a way to change results, Tara, and that is if you could somehow suppress the vote by having access to the voter database, right?
I think that there's an issue of suppression, but there's also an issue of us not understanding how elections are affected by Facebook trolling, other subversive ways of campaigning. And I think it's disingenuous to say that we would actually know whether there was an effect on the election. In fact, in Washington County, the county in which was revealed as one of the counties that was affected, there was an increase in Republican turnout from 2012 to 2016. So it does appear that there could have been even a small percentage of an impact of even some mild tinkering. If you had that small impact in Washington County and you multiply that across 67 counties in Florida or across the country, to your point, that we could have seen a real impact on the outcome of an election.
All right, so how do we get to the bottom of this? How do we find out for certain how many counties exactly were hacked by the Russians and whether or not they tampered with the voter rolls in some way? How do you get to the bottom of that?
I'm not sure that that's the question that we should be asking. I think the question we should be asking is, why isn't Florida taking its $90+ billion budget and putting it towards voter integrity or tapping into the federal monies, $380 million that Homeland Security has offered to the states to increase their voter integrity? We may never be able to figure out what happened, but we certainly can protect the integrity of the next election, and that's what we should be really asking our congressional delegation to work on.
And the other question I have is, why would anybody at any county election supervisor's office be foolish enough to click on a spear phishing, if that's the way it was done, a spear phishing email?
Yeah, we were told that it was a malware phishing email. And, you know, I'm sure anybody who's worked in an office has seen one of those come through, and you usually know not to click it. We were told it was an elections vendor. So maybe
it
that
was masked as that.
Right,
that
right. That it
pretending
was
pretending to be the elections vendor.
Portrayed to be that. So, you know, maybe it looked more friendly than it was, but still, who hasn't seen a phishing email?
Ron, what do you think the next step is? I mean, should there be an investigation by Tallahassee? And what do you think about Tara's point that we should be spending more money on voter protection, protecting our system? What do you think the next step
should be? Well, I think, number one, I think there needs to be more collaboration between the state and Homeland Security to make sure that, local supervisor of elections do have different things in place now where they're being monitored by Homeland Security. So in middle of the night, if the server comes on and information's being shared, they can see that immediately and shut it down. So mm-hmm. I think there's some things that are starting to be in place, but I think more importantly, I think if you head into the 2020 election cycle, I think Tallahassee is to make sure that our Division of Elections, working with our local supervisors, have different security measures in place to make sure that we don't have these questions again going into 2020. This is not new, by the way. If you take a step back and look, 2018, 2016, 2014, and beyond, different organizations and countries have been trying to breach election systems for a long time. It's now, I think, just coming to the surface that this not only happened in Florida, but it's happening across the nation as well.
And Mike, just before we go, Senator Bill Nelson, in the 2018 campaign, was ridiculed because he was warning something like this was happening, although he said it was happening in 2018. We don't know. There's really no evidence at this point that it was, but he was raising the specter last year, mm-hmm. or during the 2018 campaign, that something was happening.
And I think a lot of voters still have concerns about that happening, because if they just look at the outcome of the election, how did Andrew Gillum and Sean Shaw out win their elections, but Nikki Fried did, right? And just thinking about how much money those candidates raised in comparison to their visibility, their presence in the community. So a lot of folks still feel very hurt by that process, and probably we should have given Senator Nelson a little bit more credence and really investigated that more fully.
And the polls going into the election showed that Gillum and Shaw were going to win.
That's right. That's right.
Well, last week, Governor Ron DeSantis vetoed a bill that would have barred local governments from banning plastic straws. It was his first veto since taking office. 10 Florida cities have straw bans, including St. Petersburg, Miami Beach, and Fort Lauderdale. It's one indication that DeSantis does not want to grab power from local governments. Still, other bills preempting local power are awaiting the governor's decision about whether or not to sign them into law. One law passed by the legislature would make it easier for developers to ignore local comprehensive plans.
So, Tara, it looks like the governor split a bit from the legislature in saying...
I think Governor DeSantis knows that all politics are local, and I think he's standing by the Republican battle cry that, you know, we should keep our communities unique and local. But if you look at it from a different perspective, his perspective on the straw ban is maybe perhaps a veneer, because there was 18 different preemption proposals. And that is a far cry from protecting local rights. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be also a diversion of the intent of Floridians. In 1968, there was a Constitutional Revision Commission that wanted to overhaul the Constitution, make sure that home rule, making sure that local communities had the right, the 412 municipalities in Florida had the right to do local control. It was codified in 1973. And so this is a real Republican battle cry. So on the surface, Governor DeSantis is making it look like he's a good Republican and following the intent of the Constitution to empower our municipalities to have unique communities. But 18 proposals that seem to be warmly received by him says a different story.
We'll see where he goes, whether or not he vetoes those other measures too. Ron, I think the governor's saying, at least in some part, that he does believe in local control, though, by vetoing the ban on local ordinances banning plastic straws.
Yeah, look, you know, Rob, I was surprised as well that he vetoed it. I think a lot of folks within the Republican Party and some, I think, key leaders in Tallahassee were as well. Huge victory from a home rule standpoint, huge victory for local governments. I think from an environmental standpoint, he's made a commitment to the environment from the time he announced he was going to run for governor. And so I think this was an opportunity for him to show his commitment to the environment. But I think more importantly, and I think you make a really good point, is as a former congressman, I think he kind of understands and appreciates the separation of powers between the executive branch and the legislative branch. And I do believe at some level he does believe in home rule. And he even said, look, if you look at the veto message, he said that, you know, if you look at the four or five different ordinances across the state, that's not impacting anything that's happening at the state level. So that's why he vetoed it. Mm-hmm. So I think from an environmental standpoint, I think it was good for him to make that commitment and veto that bill now, because then he turns around this week, today, in fact, and, you know, we're going to talk about this in a minute, but the toll road bill, a lot of environmentalists did not want him to sign that. They wanted him to veto it. He signed that. So it's kind of a win, you know, one win for environmental over here, but a loss over there on the toll roads.
All right, we're going to get to toll roads in a sec, but there are these other measures awaiting, Maya. This will really be a test of how committed the governor is to local home rule.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, throughout this legislative session and prior to it, we've seen the state take a consistent hit towards local government and home rule. I personally believe that local governments are in the best position to make policy decisions as it relates to quality of life issues, like local environmental issues, affordable housing, transportation. And one big thing that the legislature did was to take away the opportunity for local governments to have inclusionary zones to take care of our affordable housing crisis. And that's really a loss for local governments, because our population is growing and our average median family income is not sufficient to the quality of life and the cost of living here in Florida.
All right. Well, Governor DeSantis has signed into law a bill that possibly opens the way for a massive expansion of toll roads in Florida. Environmentalists held a series of protests around the state this week to try to convince the governor to veto that bill. The law would begin to study whether to build 340 more miles of tollways in mostly rural areas of the state. A coalition of 90 environmentalists, citizen groups, and business groups reminded Governor DeSantis of his commitment to bring about a Teddy Roosevelt-style Republican Party here in Florida and asked him to kill the bill. The Sierra Club called it the worst bill for Florida's environment they've seen in more than 20 years. Supporters, which include the Florida Chamber of Commerce, Associated Industries of Florida, and the Florida Trucking Association, encouraged DeSantis to sign the bill into law. They say it's a positive step toward ensuring Florida's future transportation needs. It stimulates economic development in rural areas and creates additional hurricane evacuation routes. So, Caitlin, the governor, in the end, ignored the Sierra Club, but went with some of the big industries in Florida, the Chamber of Commerce, and signed the bill. What do you make of it?
Yeah, so he decided to sign the bill today, and you know, we had seen environmental clubs, Sierra Club, protesting all week, really trying to draw a lot of attention to this, asking the governor to veto, and in the end, he went with Galvano, and he went with groups like the Chamber, Florida Chamber, and the Transportation Builders Association, and you know he made a choice, and a lot has been tied to these roads having a key role in hurricane evacuation, and I think that's in the state of Florida. It's a hard thing for people to ignore.
But this isn't the actual building of the roads. This is just committing to a study to look at whether or not the roads make sense, right?
Right. Transportation takes a long time.
Yeah.
And the first step in any transportation program is studying it. So this commits that they are, in fact, going to study the feasibility of these three roads. And with that will come environmental impacts. That'll be part of it. And the feasibility studies take a few years. I think the earliest I've seen for construction dates starting is 2022, should those studies come through in a positive way.
So, Ron, is there a chance that the feasibility studies would come back and say there's not the ridership and it's going to hurt rural areas and they're a bad idea?
No, absolutely. And I think that's why, so from the environmental standpoint, Caitlin's spot on, this is just a feasibility study. Feasibility studies are due back, I think, by December 31st of 2022. At that point, they can make a decision if they want to move forward. Look, and you have to go through the normal environmental study, economic impact statements to ensure that whatever they want to do makes sense. And I think the legislature did a really good job of, we need infrastructure for the state. We continue to grow. We're the third largest state in the nation now. We need additional, and I think that was proven in the last hurricane, is when you're trying to get, you know, folks out of South Florida and the central part of the state going north, you need more than I-95 and I-75 to be able to do that. So I think the three corridors they're looking at make sense. I think they've done a good job. Senator Lee is actually the one that carried it in the Senate on behalf of President Galvano. I think they did a really good job in making sure they had environmental and other groups that could be impacted, had concerns about this at the table. And I think there'll be plenty of opportunity for those groups to continue to voice their concerns as this move forward over the next couple of years.
On the hurricane evacuation note, though, I have to write this story every year, being a transportation reporter, about how do you evacuate a hurricane. People are always told by emergency management, it's better to go 10 miles than 100. Yes, we see our highways clogged. We see these backups happen because human nature, people are going to ignore sometimes what is best for them. But it's interesting that you have certain authorities telling people, no, you should actually only be driving inward. You should only be driving 10 miles. You should not be getting on the interstate where you're going to be stuck. So there is a little bit of double speak here.
So when it comes to transportation or infrastructure, rather, maybe hardening public buildings 10 miles in from the coast, would that be a better use of money if you know, rather than making people drive up to
Charlie
Atlanta?
Chris talked about this because as a Republican, he declined the same feasibility study. And he said, listen, there are other smarter ways to build infrastructure, build economies in our rural communities, and create evacuation pathways for hurricane preparedness. So, you know, what does he know that our current governor didn't know or didn't think was important?
But I mean, one point there, though, is if you start changing our building code and trying to make it more difficult to build, affordable housing, which was mentioned earlier, is already an issue. Mm-hmm. So if you start changing the building code, it's to make it more expensive and even more of a challenge for middle and low-income individuals to be able to purchase a home of their own.
Okay. And quite frankly, I think we need to think about that roads aren't our only option here. Just because we have a growing number of folks who are coming to Florida, we should be thinking about a more diverse means of mobility options. Is that thinking about the role, the rail that we didn't, the dollars we didn't receive from President Obama when Rick Scott was governor. How do, else do we think about other ways for folks to move around our large state?
Well, one last question. With the Sierra Club saying this is the most important issue that they've seen in more than 20 years, what does this do to the governor's reputation as trying to be a Teddy Roosevelt Republican and move in a more environmental direction than perhaps Rick Scott did when he was governor?
Yeah, they really tried to hit him hard on that. The rally I was at this week, before the bill was signed, you know, they're wearing animal masks and trotting out the Teddy Roosevelt pictures and saying, you campaigned on this. This is something that you told Floridians mattered to you. And I think it'll remain to be seen, you know, just how much this hurts. But, you know, we're seeing a mix of bills being signed, right? So this is a negative, really big negative to the environmentalist camp, but then he's doing some other things, the straw bans, et cetera. So we'll see how it balances out.
And more funding this year for environmental conservation, too. Well, the Seminole Tribe of Florida stopped sharing revenue with the state after a new gambling deal went nowhere this session.
The tribe had warned it would halt the payments, which totaled nearly $330 million last year, because of competition from designated player card games offered by many of the state's paramutuals. The Seminoles say the games violate part of the 20-year gambling deal signed by the tribe and the state in 2010. That deal, in part, gave the tribe exclusive rights to banked card games. Governor DeSantis says he plans to continue talks with the tribe and hopes to reach an agreement for lawmakers to vote on as early as September. Under the 2010 compact, the tribe agreed to pay the state at least $1 billion for 5 years in exchange for having the exclusive right to offer card games, including blackjack, at most of the Seminoles' Florida casinos. The bank card game portion of the compact expired 4 years ago, prompting the Seminoles to file a lawsuit against the state over the designated player games. A federal judge agreed with the tribe. GOP leaders downplayed the significance of the Seminoles' action to stop the payments, noting that the House and the Senate did not include any revenue from the tribe in their 2019-2020 budget. The governor could quickly get the payments restarted by shutting down the card games everywhere but at the Indian casinos, an action that would not require the legislature's involvement, but it would deeply hurt revenue at the paramutuals.
So, Ron, is this like the last dying gasp of highlight frontons and dog tracks that are just barely holding on, and maybe even horse race tracks, versus the growing Indian casino movement here in the state of Florida? And if it is the last gasp, who's winning this skirmish?
So from a paramutual standpoint, I think they're definitely in trouble. I think if you look at the amendment that passed during the last election cycle to kind of decouple live dog racing with, you know, being able to offer card rooms, I think absolutely, you know, paramutuals are definitely in trouble. If you look at the Republican leadership out of Tallahassee did say they did not include a dollar from the compact in this year's budget. That is true. And yes, the Seminoles have stopped right now submitting, you know, payments to the state. However, I think they're going to come back in September, October timeframe, potentially do a special session to get a deal done on this. You know, they were working on a deal all legislative session. In Republican leadership out of the Senate was very, very close. It was being negotiated by Wilton Simpson on behalf of President Calvano. This is something the Senate's really been pushing for. I think you will see a deal get done that includes a new compact. I think it's going to include probably some version of live sports betting. It's probably going to include roulette, possibly, craps, but all of that will be only exclusive rights to the Seminole Indians. I think at the end of the day, how does that impact paramutuals, which is probably not going to be good? So can they include something in there? The challenge is going to be is you could only negotiate the compact and what you're giving to the Indian tribe as a part of the deal. You can't come up with expansion of gaming beyond that because of the amendment that passed in the last election cycle. Because if you try to expand gaming for the paramutuals, for example, it has to go to the ballot and pass by a 60% margin. That's probably very tough in this political environment.
So this is a way maybe for the tribes to say, or for the Seminole tribe to say, look, we want an expansion of gambling. We'll give you the card games at the paramutuals, but we want to vastly expand the range of gambling at our operations.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And if you live sports betting, I think, would be kind of the cornerstone of that. And again, if roulette and craps is a part of that, if they made $330, $350 million last year as a part of this, imagine what that dollar amount could go to. Let's say it's 800, even to, you know, 800 million to $1 billion. That's recurring revenue. That's a huge, huge additional That's an additional $700 million potentially.
Help to the state.
Help to the state.
Well, before we go, what other news stories should we be paying attention to? And Ron, let's start with you. Your other big story.
So my big story is we keep talking about the 2019 legislative session. Governor, by the way, does not even have the budget yet. He's probably going to get the budget probably sometime next week. The legislative leadership just announced committee weeks for next year. Committee weeks start in September, two in October, two in November, one in December. So the 2020 session's just around the corner. So a lot of things we're talking about today will start happening in Tallahassee starting in September.
Coming right up. Tara, your other big story?
You know, we now know that we have 23 Democratic candidates for president. And I think the really interesting piece is not who's necessarily going to get the nomination, but how they position themselves with their skills and their backgrounds to possibly get a cabinet position. And people like Mayor Pete, it's very interesting to kind of watch his iteration of his personality, because as a Rhodes Scholar and a celebrated military service person, he may or may not get the Democratic nod, but he'd certainly make a very interesting Secretary of State. So we need to watch all of those candidates to see how they position themselves to be ready for a cabinet post.
He's become a national figure. Maya, your other big story.
So former gubernatorial candidate Andrew Gillum was just in town at USF and gave a substantial amount of money to the Florida Democratic Party. And what I think will be interesting to watch is if he truly fulfills his commitment to registering 1 million new voters by the 2020 election, and if he has an opportunity to engage them, and what impact does that have on the election cycle.
Do you think he has a chance? A million is a lot of people.
It is. I think he does. Yeah. So I'm excited to watch.
All right, Caitlin, your other big story.
So the Cross Bay Ferry, which goes between Tampa and St. Pete, that sailed for the last time in April until next season. But Hillsborough County Commissioners this week were discussing a expanded, possibly permanent ferry service that would connect South Hillsborough County, Tampa, St. Pete, MacDill Air Force Base. That is still progressing. A lot uncertain about it still, but people could have permanent ferry service in a few years here.
All right. Well, thank you all. So nice to see you. Well, thanks for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org and continue the conversation on Facebook.
Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU, the PBS station in Tampa. My guest on that panel, Ron Pierce, was the Republican, and Maya Brown was the Democrat. Caitlin Johnston, a reporter at the Tampa Bay Times, was on there. So was a professor, Tara Newsom, from St. Pete College. And we talked, of course, about hacking of the Florida election systems, toll roads, the veto on the state ban on local plastic straw bans, and also the Seminole tribe stopping payments to the state to the amount of $350 million because there's no new gambling agreement with the state, between the state and the Seminoles. So if you want to comment about any of those, we've gotten a lot of emails coming in commenting about the show so far. You can email the studio here. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. And you can also call in at 813-239-9663. Now, David's email says this, and it came in during Florida This Week. He says, do county registrars know if their own counties were hacked? Did any registrars sign non-disclosures? Is any Florida news outlet investigating at the county level since the state has abdicated? That's David's email. We know a little bit more. Yes, I think all county voter registrars, supervisors of elections, know whether or not their county was hacked. So the counties that were hacked, and we know two for certain, maybe even more, we know that they know at the local county supervisors of elections office. David goes on to write, did any registrars sign non-disclosures? I'm fairly sure they did. They've been told not to speak at the very least. And his third question is any Florida news outlet investigating? Yes, a lot of people are investigating. There are private attorneys who are investigating right now. There are newspapers that are investigating right now. The Washington Post is investigating. Politico is investigating. And it's covered on the front page of the Tampa Bay Times this morning. And the bottom line on the report in the Times, we mentioned that Washington County in the Florida Panhandle was among the counties that might have been hacked, possibly been hacked. Also, Sumter County is being named as another county that likely was hacked by the Russians during the 2016 election. Now, we've still got this problem, and that is that our U.S. senators have gotten a briefing on this. Our governor has gotten a briefing on this. Our members of Congress have gotten a briefing on this. And so far, none of them are talking. All of them are going along with the FBI and keeping it quiet. And if the Russians know, then the only people being kept in the dark are Floridians, whose supervisors of elections offices were hacked. So that's what we know so far. And if you're interested, I'd start with the front page of the Tampa Bay Times this morning. David writes this. He says, I was thinking that elections offices statewide have a lot of temporary workers that are needed for the big annual elections. These temp workers might not be as well-trained or prepared to deal with cybersecurity as full-time staff. But I think it's vital to make the temps aware of phishing and how to avoid it. Perhaps there should be a state law to ensure that temps are trained on these hacking techniques on an annual basis. That's a David's email. I don't know what the training is at supervisors of elections offices but I'm sure that they're told not to respond to a phishing email. Adam writes this, we've gone from Russians didn't do any hacking to okay, they did hacking but didn't get anything, to okay, they got into some systems but they didn't change anything. What's the next logical step? They will come out and say, okay, we know they stole and used the data for something, but it's too late now. Adam goes on to write, Republicans have lied about this from the beginning because they know it benefits them. There's no reason to think that will change in 2020, writes Adam. And we've got some other emails. I'm going to read them in a second. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And Frank Knox is our phone producer today, and you're listening to Radioactivity. Thanks a lot for tuning in. And let's go to Brian. I hope I got that right. Brian in Sarasota. Brian, did I pronounce your name right?
Hi. Yeah, that's close enough.
Okay.
Not damn it. Anyways. So, are you still there?
I'm still here.
You know, the state I came from, they had a they decided to, do toll roads and new road systems. And the thing you better investigate about Galvano and his buddies is who's buying up the right-of-ways right now? I bet you they had already bought some of the right-of-ways for these proposed roads before they were even legislated into existence.
Yeah, it's really important. And in fact, there have been a couple good stories. One story, and we covered it on Florida this week on the TV show, and that is that Florida's wealthiest man, a big-time Republican donor, owns acres and acres and acres of land that's in the proposed path, of one of these tollways. So yeah, reporters are covering that story.
And secondly, this is my only other comment. The red tide and the pollution, the Republicans will never do anything about it because they don't have the will and the state doesn't have the money to do it. That's my only other comment, so.
All right. Well, Brian, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I know.
All right, good to hear from you. 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. If you're interested, and several news outlets have reported this about this wealthy guy that owns land that might be in the path of the tollway system. His name is Thomas Petterfy. He's a supporter of President Trump. He served on Governor Ron DeSantis's campaign finance team, and he's worth an estimated $18.5 billion, according to Forbes. And he also happens to own most of Taylor County, which is prime real estate for the proposed toll road that's a priority of Florida Senate President Bill Galvano. Now, I'm reading from a story in the Tampa Bay Times that ran April 24th, and you can look it up yourself. The Times headline is, new toll roads could be a boon to billionaires. To Floridians, well, who knows? That's the headline. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lori. This is Radioactivity. And if you want to comment about anything you've heard here so far, you can always email the studio right now at dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to John in Tampa. Hey, John, you're on.
Hi, Rob. I think all toll roads should be banned. I also believe that it should not be legal to charge to get into our beautiful county and state parks, but that's just me. But my main point was I wanted to just say that it's okay to dream. It's okay for us to think about the future and think big. I imagine a bullet train, Rob, from the top of the state all the way to Key West. I think it's a fabulous dream. Imagine what it would do for our state. And somehow other countries seem to be able to do it. Japan, China, all kinds of Asian countries, these fabulous bullet trains. And I guess that's my only comment, that it's okay to dream.
Well, it is okay to dream. It's interesting that you mentioned bullet trains, because on the NBC website this morning, they're talking about a brand new bullet train that's being built in Japan, and it's faster than it'll take you less time to get on this bullet train from the two cities it connects than airplanes. So it's going faster than airplanes, if you can believe it. And Japan is doing it. We've our fastest train, I think, goes 150 miles an hour between. Some on a 35-mile portion of that route between Boston and Washington, D.C., that's the fastest we go. Well, some trains in Japan are going more than 200 miles an hour, and this new one's going to go even faster. And, we always think of our country as technologically advanced. Well, if we are technologically advanced, why can't we build a train like they can in Japan?
Yeah, I know why. It's because the right wing thinks that it's all an evil conspiracy to get us out of our cars and, be controlled by the government. That's part of it. But the rest, I think this American exceptionalism concept gets in our way. Yes, we have a lot to be proud of, but we also have a lot to be maybe not so proud of. And I think it clouds our vision. And thank you for allowing me to speak.
All right, John, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Now, California has had trouble with its bullet train, and the federal government is clawing back about $1 billion that it is giving California for its bullet train project. And when Gavin Newsom was inaugurated governor of California a few months ago, he said he wanted to scale back the building of the bullet train in California. It's the train that originally was conceived to link Los Angeles and San Francisco. It's being built, but it's taking a whole lot more money than originally projected. But I still think we should have a discussion, a national discussion, about whether or not cars are the way to go. This toll road thing, and we're going to talk about toll roads again tomorrow here on this station, but the toll road thing is something, is being pushed as a way to get us out in advance of a hurricane. But the last time you evacuated from a hurricane, did you try to go to Georgia? Or did you try to go to a hotel in Central Florida? Or did you try to go to a friend's house? How do you evacuate? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Chris, who's in Sarasota. Chris, you're on M&F. Thanks for calling.
Hey, hello.
Hi, Chris. You're on. Hi. We can hear you. It's not so old-fashioned.
Yes.
Yes.
I've got a case of soda straws, and they're, I forgot how many, 24 boxes, and they're 500 straws each that I'm sending to the commissioners or, the county senators here in Florida, the ones who, decide we needed 5 more years to figure out what to do with them.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was in the parking lot. I was leaving the parking lot of Channel 3 on Friday, and I was looking down on the ground, and there were straws all over the ground. And when the people that do the coastal cleanups say they're so frustrated because one of the biggest things they find at coastal cleanups is straws, and we know the danger they can do to sea life like turtles, they're everywhere. And I was spending a lot of time outdoors yesterday. There is plastic everywhere on the ground in some parts of Tampa. It's very frustrating. I wish plastic were worth some money so that people would begin to pick it up and not throw it on the ground.
True. I agree there. So that's about all I got.
All right, Chris. Thanks a lot.
Good to hear from you.
So here's Kevin in St. Pete. He sent in this email. He says developers should be able to make urban projects and use vertical methods. This will greatly help with global warming, writes Kevin. All right. There are some people building giant projects in the cities of Tampa right now. And also, if you've been in downtown St. Pete recently, giant condos going up. Mark writes this. He says, this is the second time I've seen Maya Brown on your TV show. I'm now a big fan. She reminds me of my wife, being very sharp and well-spoken. Maya seems to be a real asset to your program, and as a Democrat, she gives me hope about our future, considering that I'm still sore that Gillum lost. That's Mark from Brandon. Peter writes this. What does hacking mean in this context? It's a vague word that gets thrown around. Well, so far, the supervisors of elections and the people that have been talking to the press say that the election results were not changed by the hacking of the Russians. What it does mean is that apparently this is, and we really don't know, but what reporters have been able to piece together and surmise, and we haven't gotten confirmation from our governor nor from our members of Congress, but it's surmised that spear phishing emails were sent to the public part of the supervisors of elections offices in probably every Florida county prior to the 2016 election. And that at least in two of those counties, and it came under a name of a vendor that the counties deal with all the time. Several people who were inexperienced clicked on those links, opening the door for their computer system at that supervisor of elections office to be entered by this spear phishing email that was purportedly sent by the Russians. Now, we're getting just brief confirmation of this. We're getting confirmation of this in the Mueller report that there was hacking attempts and successful hacking attempts at several Florida counties. We know that our elected officials were briefed a couple of times over the last 2 weeks by the FBI about this apparent and successful hacking technique, so there's confirmation there. But what we're really missing is for our governor, our U.S. senators, our members of Congress to step up and say, this is what the FBI is saying the Russians did. Nobody's really given us a report. We've gotten, you know, halfway, we've gotten confirmations from the Mueller report, and we know that members of Congress went in for these briefings, but nobody's telling us what happened. And so we, as members of the public who are very concerned about election integrity, I assume you are, that's why you're listening to a show like this, we're being left in the dark by our public officials. And I do think that Governor DeSantis should be the leader on this, and he should say it's more important for the public to know what's gone on so we can prevent this in the future than it is for him to keep quiet. I mean, it could be a small problem. It could be a large problem. It could be that they're still investigating the problem and don't know the extent of it. But there should be some transparency on the part of the governor's office, I think. And he's able to just kind of slink back and say, okay, I signed this non-disclosure agreement, so I don't have to tell you. And I'm going to keep you as a Floridian in the dark. Well, we pay for our elections systems. We pay the salary of the FBI. We pay the salary of the governor. There should be some transparency. We don't live in a kingdom. We live in a purported democracy. So, Peter, that's the answer to that question. Here's our phone number, 813-239-9663. Tony writes this. He said, your guest suggested that Homeland Security needs to make certain we're prepared for the 2020 election. But orders and priorities come from the top. Trump has made it clear he does not believe the Russians hacked our election systems. Indeed, the Republicans, starting from the very top, continue to obfuscate and or lie about what happened in 2016. That's Tony's email out there. Tony, I think you should call up those Republicans that you have a bone to pick with and tell them to come clean. Let them know that you're out there. They may not think you exist. 813-239-9663. Here's David from Lake Wales. He says, Florida Trend Magazine says, and I'm not sure, I'm just going to read what he says. This isn't very clear, but he says 295,000 acres, 200,000 homes, 25,000 hotel rooms, 100 million square feet of commercial space, and network of toll roads. Now, that's all it says. So I'm not sure what point he's making. But, David, thank you. If you could try to make that point more clearly or call us up and tell us what you think. 813-239-9663. Robert writes this regarding bullet trains. He says, I just got back from a trip to Spain. It's about 500 miles from Barcelona to Madrid, and I made the trip in 2.25 hours, and they got a bar car with beer, wine, and cocktails, writes Bob in Lakeland. All right, can you imagine going 500 miles in 2.25 hours from Barcelona to Madrid? That sounds pretty fantastic. You know, when I get in the car and I drive to Orlando, because there's always traffic between Tampa and Orlando, it's a 90-mile drive, but it always takes me 2, 3, or 4 hours to get from here to Orlando. Traffic is just terrible, especially if you go on a weekend. Let's go to Robert in Newport Richey. Robert, you're on Radioactivity. Thanks for calling in. What would you like to say? Hi, Robert. You're on WMNF. Hi, Robert.
Oh, let's see. Am I there? Yeah, I hope so. How about that?
Yeah, we can barely hear you. You're keeping up with us, right?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. So what would you like to say?
What if we just gave everyone one vote, got rid of the electoral vote, and then everyone wanted to vote? I live in states where, they project who's going to win and so on. So then we don't vote, or we always say our vote doesn't count. And then they can't be influenced by the power of technology. It's just one vote for every American, period.
Well, I think when you talk about doing away with the Electoral College, I think that makes sense. I don't think the Electoral College helps a small d democracy because it gives outsized power to states like Vermont and Wyoming and South Dakota, North Dakota, these tiny populated spaces that have very few people in it, but they have outsized power because they all have two members of the Senate. And then if they have just one congressman, they have three votes in the Electoral College, and their vote is a vote in Vermont or Wyoming or South Dakota is worth much more than a vote in Florida. So you're right. I think the Electoral College is undemocratic. As for not calling the elections results, a lot of people are voting early. A lot of in Oregon, one of those western states where they do call the eastern elections early, in Oregon, you can vote by mail. So it doesn't really matter. Maybe that's the way to vote, is just let everybody vote by mail. And that way it wouldn't matter what happened on Election Day. You wouldn't be influenced by what the TV networks are saying at 8 p.m. Eastern. All right, Robert, thanks a lot.
A pleasure. Have a great
day. All right, great to hear from you. And let's go to David in Lake Wales, who I think might have sent that email. David, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, Bob. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
I'm trying to be brief with the email. Came from Florida Trend Magazine of September 2017. And what I wrote to you is the proposal, you know, what they see coming. With this, with these toll roads, it's not just going to be roads that run through the middle of nowhere waiting for the next hurricane. That's not the point at all. This is going to make some people very, very rich that are already very, very rich. And, you know, there's a big article here, but it's quite concerning. 295,000 acres, and as I wrote before, all these other things. So that's what I wanted to say. Now, you talk about the elections. That's a whole nother... You know, there's something very dirty going on here, and it was very interesting to hear that each supervisor of elections already knows whether they've been hacked and they're sworn to secrecy.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't smell very good to me, and I'm glad you brought it all up.
Yeah, you know, just to your first point, you say 295,000 acres are going to be developed for these toll roads, 200,000 homes are going to be put in, 25,000 hotel rooms, 100 million square feet of retail commercial space.
That's right.
And the toll roads on top of that. You know, it just seems to me that when I drive through parts of rural Florida, and if you go down to a little town like Venus, which doesn't really exist, but it's out there, you know. And
there's a campground there that I have visited in the past.
It's so incredibly peaceful, and
yes,
you don't hear the noise of the interstate, and you don't get the dust from the interstate. There's micro dust now coming from all the interstates. That's a major cause of air pollution and lung disease, and people are beginning to recognize that. So when you go to a little town like Venus, and you're far away. I mean, I think is it 27 that goes through Venus? Anyway, whatever road...
Yes, well, it goes right near it. Venus is just west of 27, that's correct.
So when you go through there, it is so peaceful and so comforting just to listen to the crickets at night and listen to the birds at night. Why would we want to blow that up and create something, you know, like I-95, which is a horror show, or US 19 through Pinellas County, which is another horror show? You can't, you know, if you sleep next to one of those big interstates or crosstown expressway or US 19, it's hard to sleep next to it. And it just, we shouldn't destroy all of Florida for, you know, to make money for these billionaires. There should be parts of it.
Going on all over the country, of course. And the reason is so that wealthy people can become even more wealthy. But, you know, it's funny because when we need to escape, when we need to get away and recharge our spirit, you know, what do? We head for the woods. We head for the rural areas. And yet, what do? As a country, we keep taking away more and more of what we need, you know.
Yeah, why do we do that? I mean, it just seems like incredibly short-sighted. We used to have probably the most beautiful state in the country, and we continue to screw it up, whether it's global warming and sea level rise, or whether it's putting too much development on the beaches. I mean, many of us came here. I wasn't born here, but many of us came here and stayed here because we love the beauty of the state. And now we're going to screw it up.
Well, this one that you're speaking of is huge. And I think that, you know, by and large, it's really kind of the end of it all. Yeah, there'll be patches here and there of rural stuff, but this is so big. And to use the excuse that we need it for hurricanes, well, okay, but, you know, we're also adding over 200,000 homes, et cetera, that aren't there now.
Yeah.
So just how much space is going to be left on these toll roads, you know, we all know it, not free roads. You know, it is a shame. And so what I do is I go up to northern Florida and try to recharge my batteries. There's a few nice places, Cross Creek area for one, which is in Alachua, southern Alachua County. But there are a few. But you're right, it gets worse all the time. But this is such a big one.
Yeah,
that,
all right.
You know, I hope people are paying attention.
All right, we're going to talk about it tomorrow, too, on the station. Thanks a lot, David. Thanks for
Very
the information.
Good, Thank you.
Thank you. And you are listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Liz writes this, I totally agree that Governor DeSantis should spearhead the transparency of what happened during the 2016 elections. I frequently write my representatives through the application called ResistBot. It's a fast and easy way for me to just shoot off a letter properly formatted in less than 5 minutes. Then I can act when the feeling strikes me most. Like right now, I'm writing Governor DeSantis. So Liz, thanks for that. She's in Spring Hill. So her suggestion is download that app called ResistBot, rather. Thank you. And let's go to Elizabeth in Riverview. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on MNF.
Oh, how do you do? How are you today?
I'm good, Elizabeth. How are you?
Oh, I am fine and dandy. You were speaking a little bit ago about the Electoral College. I want you all to bear in mind the Electoral College gave us President Tweet. I can't think of a better reason to get rid of it, can you?
Well, a lot of Republicans, I think, like the fact that he was able to win through the Electoral College, even though he came with, got overall about 3 million fewer votes than did the Democrat in that race. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
all right, Elizabeth, thanks a lot.
Yes, sir.
All right, good to hear from you. And we're going to go to Marcel in Sarasota. Hi, Marcel.
Hi, it's Marcel.
Hi, Marcel.
I just have a quick question about the highway being unfortunately voted through. Are there any groups proposing to sue over this? Maybe stop
this? We're at the beginning stages where several million dollars were okayed by the legislature to study whether or not these toll roads make sense. So that's where we're at. The state will pay for a feasibility study, and then they'll have to come back in order to get future funding. They'll have to go back to the legislature and say, "Hey, now that we got the feasibility study, my guess is the feasibility studies will say it's a good idea to build the toll roads because the people that want the toll roads are in charge of Tallahassee." And then,
it'll be up to the legislature to vote vote for future money. It'll cost billions, hundreds of billions of dollars to build this thing.
Right.
So we're at the beginning stages of that, and that's why people have to pay attention to who gets elected in Tallahassee. Yeah. All right, Marcel, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Now, Bob in Largo says that ABC and CBS local television stations stated this morning that the toll roads are a done deal. That's Bob in Largo. You know, I read the Associated Press story this morning about it, too, and the AP is reporting it's a done deal. Not really true. And we'll talk more about it tomorrow on this show on Radioactivity. So if you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Sean Kinnan. He's coming up next on the Midpoint program. You know, there's going to be protests here in the Tampa Bay area about the Alabama abortion law and also the other efforts around the country to roll back access to safe, legal abortions. So Sean's going to talk about that in the coming hour. And first, we're going to get the latest news from NPR. Thanks to Frank Knox, our phone producer today. This is...